You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
So this morning, I want to talk about a comparison, a versus kind of moment. This versus that. And the first thing I want to talk about is writing an Amazon review. Now, let me just ask you, actually, why don't we hit the house lights so I can see everybody here? Top row. How many of you have ever written an Amazon review? Wow. Okay. How many of you have ever written a review of any type? Okay, all right, a little bit better. In an Amazon review, you basically share kind of your opinion about a product. You know, you try it. If you like it, it gets 5 stars, 4 stars. If you don't like it, it gets 2 stars, 1 star. And but you kind of share what you think about the product. Yeah, it was all right. Yeah, it was good. No, I didn't like it. I mean, it helped me. It felt good for that moment. Didn't last long, whatever. But that's kind of what an Amazon review is, and some of you guys know that I actually am a reviewer kind of guy. I've written a lot of Amazon reviews, and I feel like if it's a good product, like, I want people to know about it, and I say, 5 stars, here's why you should get it. If it's a bad product, hey, here's why you shouldn't get it, 1 star. I typically don't dwell in the 2 to 3 star range there, just because I'm like, it's average. But actually, in the process of this, Amazon recognized that, and I am now an official Vine reviewer, so technically I am an Amazon influencer. So yay! Okay, you know, an influencer. But actually, what's really cool is they give us free products, and we have to write reviews for it. But that's not what I'm talking about. What I want to talk about is writing an Amazon review, and we'll get into the other side of this comparison. But an Amazon review, there have been some really interesting reviews written over the years, and I just thought I'd share a few of them with you. And so here, this first review is for this gigantic beach ball. And you can't read the description probably there, so I will read it for you. It's 2 stars. A fun way to ruin a weekend and blow $100, so I'm guessing it was $100. And the review says, we took this ball to the beach, and after close to 2 hours to pump it up, we pushed it around for about 10 fun-filled minutes. That was when the wind picked up and sent it hurtling down the beach at about 40 knots. It destroyed everything in its path. Children screamed in terror at the giant inflatable monster that crushed their sandcastles. Grown men were knocked down trying to save their families. The faster we chased it, the faster it rolled. It was like it was mocking us. Eventually, we had to stop running after it because its path of injury and destruction was going to cost us a fortune in legal fees. Rumor has it that it can still be seen stalking innocent families on the Florida panhandle. We lost it in South Carolina. So there's something to be said about its durability. So that's pretty funny. I would say Google it to your, like, there's some very funny reviews that are not very family friendly. So don't just start sharing these. But I did find some other ones. Here's another review. If any of you are in this house are, you know, 2 and under, I'm about to spoil something for you. So sorry, spoiler alert for all the 2 and unders in the house. But this is for the book, Where is This Baby's Belly Button? It gets 1 star. It says, do not buy this book. You can see the ending right on the cover. It says, this book is completely misleading. The entire plot revolves around this, around finding baby's belly button. The title makes it this much clearer from the beginning. However, there is no mystery. There is no twist. The baby's belly button is right where it's supposed to be. On baby's stomach. Right where it clearly shows you on the cover of this book. This plot is a complete mess as a result of its reliance on the mystery of where the belly button is. Everything falls apart the second you realize that the belly button was in plain sight all along. There is no conflict, there is no character development, and there was scarcely any plot. Whoever wrote this book must have a serious error in judgment, because you would have to be an infant to not immediately understand where the baby's belly button is. This is one of the worst pieces of literature that I have ever read. So there you go. Sorry, spoiler for all you little kids. Here's another one. Apparently it's for googly eyes. And this review says it's a perfect addition to VR goggles. The reviewer writes, I was looking for something to make using my VR workspace a little less obvious and distracting to coworkers. So I picked some of these to trick them into thinking that I'm paying attention. So, yeah, here's one of my favorites here. This is the Wheelmate Laptop Steering Wheel Desk. I've got two reviews for this one. Review number one, 1 star. Prepping vegetables before I get home. I like to eat healthy, and this makes it so much easier. I can prep vegetables for dinner during my drive home from work. Plus, if someone gives me grief, I have a knife ready to throw at them. I've also been scrapbooking while driving, but decided to abandon this idea after I accidentally glued my hands to the wheel. So that's 1 star review. Here's a 5 star review for the same product. Amazing! Holds my sheet music perfectly while driving. This has been a total lifesaver. It allows me to prop my sheet music against the wheel, allowing me to play the guitar with both hands while driving. So the laptop steering wheel desk, it's 1 star, 5 star, I don't know, you just need to decide. Sometimes Amazon, and if you guys have ordered products, you probably have gotten, and this is not a plug for Amazon, but they'll sometimes send you an email saying, hey, a customer has asked this question, and you can have a chance to respond to it. And so apparently for this math calculator, the TI-84, a customer question says, what does it smell like? Maybe they've had issues with smelly plastic calculators. It's a real thing. You know, the struggle is real. And the answer was, it smells like the tears of an English major trying to complete a math class. So that's one. Here's another customer question, and this is great. This is for pepper spray, and it says, can you replace the spray when you run out? The response, the answer was, if you run out of pepper spray, you may need to move to a different neighborhood. Sometimes you can write a review, and the seller, if it's like through the Amazon Marketplace, which is like the personal sales, not directly from Amazon, they can respond. And so here was someone's review to the seller for this product. 1 star, not original, fake, poor product quality, poor service by seller, delivery time below expectation. Seller response, that's classic. But those are some funny, stupid reviews. But again, when you get a product, when you do an Amazon review, you're like, yeah, I liked it. It was good. I'll give it 1 star. I'll give it 2 stars. Or 4 stars. It made me feel really good. I liked it. It was helpful. And you would write that review probably differently than if you were asked to share a eulogy at a funeral. Probably. Both of them require kind of your opinion. But you're probably not going to be like, granddad, he was all right. Sometimes his hugs were a little bit too tight. I'll give him 2 stars. Like, no one would write a eulogy like that. No one would share something like that. And I remember I was asked years ago to share my grandfather, my pop-op's funeral. And the amount of time that it took to think about what should I say? What are the things I say? And it wouldn't just be like a review of how good he was or how good he did or whatever. It was a reflection on the great things about him. And his life, and his successes, and his failures, and the fun times we had. And it's something that wasn't quickly written. You wouldn't just quickly throw this on, you know, because you would take your time to put your heart into it. And of course, it would be thoroughly offensive if you were to write a eulogy like you would write an Amazon review. Because this is a person we're talking about, not a product. This is someone who is valuable. And again, you know, you think about those moments. You maybe share meaningful moments that you've had with that person, the hard times, how they impacted you. I mean, today being Father's Day, you might reflect on, yeah, this is what my dad or my granddad did for me. And in doing that, you pour out your heart. You wouldn't respond the same way you would to an Amazon review. And again, it would be offensive if you reviewed that person in a funeral in that way. And yet, Christ followers like you and me, not just like you and me, you and me, often treat worship like an Amazon review. Because we come into this idea of worship, and worship is more than just singing, but I'm going to kind of hone in a little bit on singing today. But when we look at worship, we're like, yeah, you know, they didn't sing the song I like, I couldn't worship. It wasn't one that I knew, so it was new, so I couldn't worship. The lights were too bright. There weren't enough lights, so I couldn't worship. I'll give it 2 stars. I might be back. I might not. I'm going to go somewhere where I feel like I'm more fed. We'll get into that next week. And we kind of look at like, yeah, I mean, it was a good song. The band did all right. Meh. Oh, wait, I've got Sunday coming up. It's time for worship. I don't know. It was like 1 star last week, so maybe I won't come this week. Oh, it's those people leading. I'm not going to be there. Oh, it's a Mission Sunday. Definitely out. And we look at and treat that way. And yet worship is, we're worshiping the God of the universe. As Kirk prayed, the God that has done so much for us as the perfect Father. As we just sang about being abandoned for the one that has done so much for us. And yet when it comes to worshiping him, we're like, yeah, I'll give you 2 stars today, God. I felt it. Or we're like, you know what? I was in a bad mood, so I'm not going to sing today. Or something bad happened to me last week. So worship isn't worth any numbers. Or again, it might be, oh, that was my favorite song, 5 stars. And if you don't do that song every week, your review is going to go down. And we treat God that way. And we're like, that's cool? That's cool to be able to treat God more like an Amazon review than a eulogy, because in a eulogy, if you were worshiping, and that's not that worship is that, but the word eulogy actually comes from a Greek word, eulogeo, which literally means good word. That's the literal phrase, and it means to bless, to speak well of, to praise. And so in a eulogy for a human being, you praise them, not that you worship them, but you praise them for who they are and what they've done for you and the meaningful, you know, things that have happened. And yet we come to worship, which is supposed to be, and actually that's one of the words that is used in the New Testament, eulogeo, to praise and bless God. And we're like, maybe not. And our mood affects that. There's so many things, and we'll get into that as we go on this morning. But this series, On Fire, we have one more week to go next week, and we're going to bring it all back together, and we're going to wrap things up, hopefully. But it's not about, if you're not a Christ follower, this really isn't for you. And if you can learn something from this, if you're watching or listening, and you're like, hey, I never knew that, that's cool. But I'm talking to those of us that are followers of Jesus. Because we say, as we said the very first week, we're on fire for Jesus, but yet we don't make him a priority. And we've talked about all these different things. We've talked about serving. Yeah, I'll serve when I feel like it. We've talked about Bible reading. I'll get to it if I have to. Prayer, well, I guess I should say it this way. And we've looked at all these things about what does it mean to be on fire for Jesus? Not just present. Not just, oh yeah, I'm going to heaven, so I'm good. But what does it look like to be on fire? And when it comes to this idea of worship, someone on fire doesn't just sing songs. Because again, we've got this idea that, and again, worship is more than that. Worship is prayer. Worship is studying the Word of God. Worship is singing. Worship is, we'll see in a little bit of worship, it should be everything we do. But we kind of have this idea like, yeah, I'm just singing the song. Sing the words. Completely sold out, hands to the ceiling, abandoned. All right, okay, good. I've only got 2 more hours before I can get out of here. And is that how we see worship? Because someone on fire doesn't just sing songs. They pour out their heart. Your worship should sound more like a eulogy, praising God for who he is and what he's done. And a whole lot less, if at all, like an Amazon review. It was too loud today. 2 stars. Wasn't loud enough. 1 star. And we put it in this box and we're like, God, you better entertain me. And if I'm not entertained, I don't like it. If I've had a bad week, I don't like it. If I messed up, I definitely don't show up to worship. If something bad happened to me, nope. And if you think about a eulogy at a funeral, the people that we eulogize, the people that we talk about, they screwed up.
big. And the reason I know that is because they're a human being, just like me and just like you. But we typically don't talk about all the horrible things. Why? Because we want to honor them. And again, I'm not saying that Jesus, that God screwed up or that he's got horrible things. But we want to tell him it doesn't matter about our opinion or our feelings or what might have happened to us this week, because God is still worthy of our worship. God is still worthy of us pouring out our heart. And as we've been doing, Justin summarized this yet again. We've got the YouVersion notes there. There's the QR. If you haven't done it, the YouVersion notes are really where we're going to follow along. It allows me to go a little bit faster as well. And there's some blanks there that you can fill in. And again, if you didn't save the event, you need to do that or you'll lose your notes. But I want to talk about when it comes to worship, is it a review or is it a eulogy? Is it a review that you kind of go, yeah, 2 stars, or is it pouring out your heart for all that God is and for all that he has done? And we're going to be looking at a psalm, Psalm 42. And almost exactly a year ago, this psalm that we're going to be studying kind of wrecked me. And if you remember, about a year ago, if you were here that day, you remember that day, because I got up here right at the beginning and said, what if we get rid of the lights? What if we get rid of the band? And get rid of all of it. And I just sat here on a stool and said, what does it look like to really love Jesus? What does it really look like to obey the word of God? And this psalm was something that was resonating in my heart, going, okay, what is worship? What does it look like if we're, and you know, a year later, what does it look like if we're on fire? And Psalm 42 is just a beautiful picture of all these pieces of worship. And the worship here in Psalm 42 is raw. It's real. It's kind of clunky. It's kind of messy. It's not all like, everything is good, I'm happy, everybody's happy. You know, it's nothing like that. But it's worship because the psalmist is pouring out their hearts. And the reason I say the psalmist is we're not really sure who wrote it. Most likely it's David. It's feeling David-ish. But David often says, this is a psalm of David. He didn't. He just said that this is for the sons of Korah. They were the worship leaders. And congratulations, Korah. How many sons do you guys have? Like, okay, good. But it was for the sons of Korah. It was to be passed on. They were the worship leaders. So it was written for them to do that. And so we're going to be in Psalm 42. And there's a bunch of things that I just want to pull out here to see how this person that wrote this psalm, as they were worshiping, how raw and real they were. And so there's a bunch of different things that we see here. The first thing we see is that there was a longing for worship. And this is what Korah, this Korah, read for us on the stage this morning. In verses 1 to 2, the writer says, as the deer longs for streams of water. As a deer longs for streams of water. And this idea of you know, and hey, 322, right? Somebody said, let's put an important road right next to a river on the other side of a mountain. There's a reason that deer get hit there. Some of them don't just get hit. Some of them get slain on the way to the missions trip airport, just like that. But because the deer is trying to get to the water, and there's this idea, and you probably have seen if you have a dog or an animal. I don't know if cats do this. I don't know what good things cats do. But dogs, if they like run around and they're doing something, then when they're done, they're like, they're panting. And that's the same word here. They're panting. What do they need? And as soon as they go, and they do, you know, do all that stuff and drink. And there's a really cool science about the way they cup their tongue. It's kind of cool. I don't do that, but I can roll my tongue. See, I can do that. You know where my belly button is? Anyway, I'm not going to show you. But this idea of desiring water, like that animal needs that water. And the psalm writer says, just like that, that's how I long for you, God. I thirst for God, the living God. Where can I go and stand before him? He's like, God, I need to worship. How can I do this? Where can I go? Because I need it. I crave it. I desire it. Just like that animal does. And the writer is saying that this is essential. This is the foundation for everything else that we're going to read in this psalm. Saying, I want to worship. I need to worship you, God. How can I do that? And this being the foundation raises the question for you and me. Is this the foundation for us? Do we gather to worship? Do you gather to worship because you crave worship? Or is it because, well, it's what I'm supposed to do, or I have to serve today, so I guess I'll be there? My parents expect me to show up. Whatever. What does it look like for you? Is that the foundation? There's a very something on the ceiling over there, on the roof. We could. It's just a woodpecker. It's okay. Probably. So, all right. Maybe it's someone knocking to come in. Okay. So anyway, if you're watching online, there's a noise coming from the corner. Is it you, Trish? Okay, it's not Trish. All right, just making sure. Just making sure. But anyway, this idea of saying, how can I go and worship God? Is that something, is that your attitude? This foundation saying, I crave worship. I long for you. How can I go and worship you, God? And in Psalm 42, we did three series called A Summer of Psalms, Another Summer of Psalms, and Yet Another Summer of Psalms. We talked about Psalms and looked at this idea of worship, and we talked about that in this series. You can find that on the slideshow there. But the first thing was this longing for worship. And then he shares something that's kind of real, that's kind of raw. He shares his preference for worship. He shares his preference for worship. And one of the things that you should understand is that, you know, back in this time, worship took place at the temple. As far as the official corporate worship, they would go to the temple in Jerusalem, also called Mount Zion, and they would gather there where the physical temple was. And we actually talked about this last week when we looked at David and his prayer saying, God, everything comes from you. Who are we to give to you? That was a celebration of gathering the supplies for building the temple. Anyway, so the temple was a physical location. And so he shares a little bit of this in verse 42, verse 3. He says, day and night, I have only tears for food. While my enemies continually taunt me, saying, where is this God of yours? He says, I want to worship God. And everyone's going like, you aren't. Where is God? I mean, it looks like you're really far away from Jerusalem. How can you worship your God? And he says, my heart is breaking as I remember how it used to be. I said, I remember this moment, and I love the way it was. He said, I walked along among the crowds of worshipers, because every year the Jewish people would make a pilgrimage to Jerusalem to worship. I walked among the crowds of worshipers, leading a great procession to the house of God, singing for joy and giving thanks amid the sound of a great celebration. And he's like, man, I miss that. Why can't it be like it used to be? Why isn't it the way it was before? We've always done it that way. Why do we have to change? And he was being real. He wishes the way it used to be. And right here, for Americans like you and me, Christian, Christ-following Americans, this might be the end. Because if it isn't the way it used to be, or the way we've always done it, we might be like, one star, I'm out. And we get caught up in this, like, oh, this is the way it has to be. This is the way it should be. And of course, we're going to be looking at more verses. So Psalm 42 doesn't end at verse 4. But he's real. Like, God, you know, I kind of miss that. And I think there's value in reflecting. And we'll see in a moment. But there's value in going, hey, that was really cool. Remember that time. And remember that moment where that thing happened, or that mountaintop experience, or when I was at that camp, or I was over on that, I was at that retreat, or that thing that happened in church that one day. Or that time we were in our small group and our prime group, and this thing just really, like, we have those moments, and those are great, but you can't try to recreate that to force this emotional change. And it's like a good movie, and I'm not going to spoil the ending, but I'll just say, like, The Sixth Sense. That's a classic movie with a big twist ending. You can't make The Seventh Sense. The sequel won't work because the ending has already been spoiled. You can't redo that. And you enjoy that movie, and maybe you don't enjoy that movie. It's freaky. But maybe there's that moment like, that was cool. But if you're like, why don't they make a sequel to that movie? Because you can't. Because there's something about what happened that one time that was good, but you can't redo that and try to recreate it. And if that doesn't make sense, that's okay. You don't need to go watch that movie. But that's what he's saying. I remember how it used to be. And I have this preference. And again, that's my question for you and me. Can you only worship when it's the song that you like? Are you bound to your preferences? Can you only worship when it's not just a song you like, but can you only worship when it's a song? Are we able to worship beyond music? And it's okay to say, God, there was that moment. That was so cool. And I know this has happened. I've had this. I was a worship leader at our previous church. Obviously, my wife is the worship leader, the worship band coordinator here. But people are like, hey, can we do this song? And typically, we're like, oh, yeah, that's good. Or maybe it will work. Or maybe it won't work for congregational worship. Not every song that is meaningful works on this setting. But a lot of times, when you find out, you're like, why? Oh, because when I was a teenager, we sang this at camp, and that was the time that I gave my life to Jesus. And so that song has this power and this meaning to it, and there's nothing wrong with that. And we can go, that was so cool. But if we try to say, every time I sing that song, God's going to make me grow, or something like that, now God has become sort of a magical formula. And that's not worship. And so that's what he's saying. He's got this preference for worship. And again, preference is okay. But then it leads to, and this is again, where verse 4 was probably where many of us would stop. But after the preference for worship, it leads to this phrase that you're going to see twice, which is surrender in worship. Surrender, because he gets to this spot where he realizes, you know what, just because I can't worship where I want to and the way I want to, doesn't mean I can't worship. And so he says here in verse 5 of Psalm 42, he says, why am I discouraged? Why is my heart so sad? He's like, why am I all beat up? Like, I miss it. I want to worship God, and I can't worship because the temple's not here, because they're not singing the song that I like, and they added those lights, and it screwed everything up, and I just can't do it anymore. What is wrong? He's like, wait. Why am I so discouraged? Why is my heart so sad? I'm going to put my hope in whether they do my song next week. Maybe next week they'll do the song I like. That's not what he says. I will put my hope in God. I will praise him again, my Savior and my God. He recognizes, you know what? Worship isn't about me or my preference or the location. It's about God. And I need to pour out my heart. I need to surrender in worship. And I think it's really cool. The NIV, this is the NLT, but the NIV, they use the phrase on the last part of verse 5 there, he says, yet I will praise him. And the NLT says, I will praise him again, which doesn't quite convey the same thing. He's like, despite all the crappy stuff, and despite that I'm not doing it the way I want to, yet I'm still going to praise him. And that's worship. It's not about the circumstances. It's not about our opinions or our feelings, and we'll get to that in a moment. It's about God. And if we're giving God a 2-star review, guess whose fault that is? It's your fault. It's my fault. And that's one of the things that's interesting on Amazon. If you write something in a review and say, I didn't like it because the package arrived too late, or the box was damaged, Amazon as a corporation will show up on that review. They'll actually cross it out and say that if that was the problem, that was our fault. It has nothing to do with the product. It was a delivery problem that has to do with us, not the product. And on some level, that's kind of the same thing for us. If we're like, oh, the worship wasn't good. It's not God's fault. It's not the product's fault, if you will. Product. Hey, go, got a product. Okay, get over it. I'm just using a metaphor. But it's not the product's fault. It's the delivery. So he gets to this spot where he's willing to surrender. And then he continues on in verse 6. And after the surrender, he goes back to remembering as worship. And this, we kind of talked about it a little bit already. But he remembers all that God has done. And he's real with God. And this is so cool. In verse 6, he says, now I am deeply discouraged. He says, but I will remember you. He says, my circumstances, my situation right now is not great. God, I'm worshiping you in this psalm, but I just want you to know, God, I want to be real. Like, I'm discouraged. This is rough right now. He says, but I will remember you. Even from the distant Mount Hermon, the source of the Jordan, from the land of Mount Mizar. And so what you're like, what does that mean? What he's telling us is that he is north, north, north in Israel. He is very far away from Jerusalem. And so he's just saying, even all the way out here, where I know that it's not the way I usually worship, where it's not like I've done before, even all the way out here, I'm going to remember you. He says, I hear the tumult of the raging seas as your waves and surging tides sweep over me. He's like, I'm just overwhelmed. I'm drowning here, God. And this is hard. And right now, in this moment, I'm not feeling like happy and wonderful and good. He says, but each day the Lord pours his unfailing love upon me. And through each night, I sing his songs, praying to God who gives me life. See, he gets to this point where he says, right now, things aren't great. And God, I'm just being real. Right now, it kind of sucks. This is really hard. I want to worship you differently. I wish I still had that job. I wish I could celebrate Father's Day celebrating a good father. I wish I could celebrate Father's Day with my father still here. And we say these things, and he says, but you know what? Despite all of this, God, your unfailing love is poured out on me. You love me every moment of every day. And so maybe our circumstances are not worshipful or worship worthy, but God, you are. And so I'm going to remember you, and I'm going to remember you as worship. And so again, the question is, do you allow how you feel in this moment to determine whether you can worship God? Because he is always worthy of our worship, even if our circumstances aren't the greatest. And again, even in that worship, crying out to God and saying, God, this is hard, this is rough, but you are good. And you are worthy of my praise. You are worthy of my worship. And then he moves on to this next thing, which is even a little bit more real and raw, where he goes from remembering as worship to grieving as worship. He actually just completely opens up in grief, in pain, in sadness and sorrow. And in verse 9, he goes on and says, oh, God, my rock. Okay, which is a statement about God's foundation, God's steadfastness, his unfailing love. Oh, God, my rock, I cry. And you're like, oh, that must mean he's just yelling out. It could be, but hold on. He says, why have you forgotten me? Why must I wander around in grief, oppressed by my enemies? God, this is hard. You're my rock. You're worthy of my praise. I'm not happy. And it's okay to be sad. It's okay to weep. It's okay to grieve and mourn. He says, my enemies, they're making fun of me. Their taunts are breaking my bones. They're saying so many hard things. They scoff, where is this God of yours? They're making it hard, God, and right now it's really hard. And God, I'm sad and I'm disappointed and I'm discouraged. But you are my rock. And I'm going to continue to be real, even when things aren't good. He literally cries in worship. And so again, kind of bringing that back in, do you allow your current emotional state to affect whether you can worship? Do you only worship when you're happy? Or do you worship through the pain? Because again, worship isn't about our situation. It's about our good, good God. And so he grieves as worship, which then brings us full circle back to surrender in worship again. And by the way, Psalm 42 was thought to be a first part of a two-part song, and Psalm 43 was considered to be the conclusion. And if you read through Psalm 43, the very last verse is the same phrase again. And this is what he says in verse 42, and verse 11, and in verse 5 we already read. Same phrase. Why am I discouraged? Why is my heart so sad? I will put my hope in God. I will praise him again, my Savior and my God. And so despite all of the good and the bad, and he's not worshiping the way he would prefer to worship, and despite the fact that things are rough and people are mocking him, God is still worthy of worship. And it brings you back to verse 1 where he says, just like the deer craves water, God, I crave you, and you are worthy of it, no matter my situation, no matter my experience. And the worship is like a eulogy saying, God, you are great. My circumstances are rough, but that doesn't change your goodness. But it's certainly not I didn't feel like it today. The temperature was okay in the garage, though, so I'll give you 3 stars. Because Worship is not a review. It's a eulogy. It's like a eulogy. It's a praise, blessing God for who he is, for what he has done for us. So again, the point is, someone on fire doesn't just sing songs. If you just sing songs, you're not worshiping. You're not. You're just singing songs. That could be a Kanye West song. It could be a Taylor Swift song. You could sing it here, and hey, we're all singing it together, but that doesn't mean it's a worship. So the question we've asked every week, and we will ask one more time next week, for you to answer, not for me to answer, because I'm not answering for you, and I'm not even able to answer for you, and I don't even care in terms of trying to judge your hearts. But just to be real, like, God, if I say I'm on fire for you, am I really? And the question is, am I on fire for worship? Am I on fire? Are you on fire for worship? Yeah, God, I love you. God, you're great. But in the moment, I don't feel like it, so I'm not going to show. God, I'm sad right now, so I'm not going to respond. Or maybe vice versa. I love this song, and I'm going to sing, and I'm going to jump and dance and raise my hands. But it's more about the song than about the God that we are singing, to whom we are singing. And I would say this, just as a side note, this isn't in my notes, but like, the music is cool and great and quality, in my opinion. But the worship is in the lyrics. And sometimes you're like, oh, I love the song. It's got a cool beat. But do you realize what the words are? They're kind of like, God, you're kind of swell and you're sort of neat. And if I'm feeling good, I might sing about you. And lyrically, that's not really that great. It's not really talking about God and how great he is. And so that's why some of you, and we've talked about this before in our Churchianity 101 series, we talk about one week, why do we worship the way we do here at MC3? And sometimes there are songs that are suggested that are just not used because it's not personal. It's just, this isn't the best way to worship. And so if we're hung up on the music but not on the lyrics, then we're kind of missing something, because the lyrics are how we tell God how great he is, which, as a matter of fact, is literally the word of one of the songs we sang today. So some questions to answer, to reflect upon yourself if you're on fire for worship. The first question is, do I worship unashamedly? And that's a word. Unashamedly, am I willing to just give it my all? Am I willing to sing the words we just sang, to say, I'm sold out, sincerely abandoned? I don't care who sees me. I don't care what they might say. I'm going to raise my hands to do that. I'm going to sing out loud. Because I think if we're limited in how we worship because of our environment, because of the people that might be watching, then you're not really on fire for worship. You're on fire for their opinion of you. And in 2 Samuel chapter 6, and you have the notes there, it's actually two parts that I'm going to look at, and YouVersion kind of, I brought them together for you. But the story here is that the ark, which was stolen by the Philistines during the time of David, has now come back into the hands of the Israelites. And they're bringing it into Jerusalem. They're bringing it into the city. And it was a huge festival and a huge parade, because finally the ark, where God's presence dwelled, and we don't have time to get into all that, was finally back into the city where it belonged, where the temple would be. And so King David was the king, and he was celebrating in front of everybody. It says, wearing a linen ephod, which for the most part would be sort of like, he's out there in his boxers and a t-shirt. Not quite that, crass, but he's not wearing kingly robes. He's kind of out there in like shorts and a t-shirt, let's put it that way. And he's out there, and it says, David was dancing before the Lord with all his might, while he and all of Israel were bringing up the ark of the Lord with shouts and the sounds of trumpets. So this is a huge worship party, because the ark was back, and they're celebrating God. And that's what it said, before the Lord. And then it said, as the ark of the Lord was entering the city of David, also known as Jerusalem, Michal, daughter of Saul, also David's wife at the time, watched him from a window. So that's important to know, because the procession's going to get there. They're going to do some more worshiping, and they're going to sacrifice some animals as an offering to God. And then finally, jumping down to verse 20, it says, when David returned home to bless his household, Michal, daughter of Saul, came out to meet him. So his wife comes out and said, how the king of Israel has distinguished himself today. going around half naked in full view of the slave girls of his servants as any vulgar fellow would. Well, look at you, David. Aren't we, Mr. King, now? You look like a fool out there. Do you realize the servants, the slave girls of the servants think you look like an idiot? You are offensive, David. You're supposed to be the king. You're my husband. You have offended me because you were just worshiping God that way. And David said to Michael, it was before the Lord. He says, I was worshiping before the Lord. Michael, I'm not worshiping for you, sweetheart. It's not your opinion that I care about. And just because David says this, he says, it's before the Lord, who chose me, by the way, rather than your father or anyone over his house when he appointed me ruler over the Lord's people, Israel. By the way, God chose me and not your dad to be the king. So I'm just going to do that. Anyway, he says, I will celebrate before the Lord. I'm worshiping God. I will become even more undignified than this, and I will be humiliated in my own eyes. If that's what it takes, he says, I'm going to give God everything and I'm going to be humiliated and I will be embarrassed. And if that means people are like, man, your voice is awful. Why are you singing out loud? Maybe you should sing in your heart. No, I'm going to sing out loud. What? Why are you raising your hands? What, are you getting all crazy on us? No, because I don't care about your opinion. I care about God's opinion and I'm worshiping him and not you. And he says, I'm going to be more undignified than this. If that's what it takes to worship my God, then I'm going to do it. I don't care what people think. And he says, by the way, those slave girls, they're going to hold me in honor because they know where my heart is. And they're like, that man is worshiping God. And that's what I want. And so the question for us is, do we worship unashamedly? Is your ability to worship determined by those around you? So if perhaps Chris is standing near you, do you sing? Because now, like, oh, the pastor's watching me. I should sing and worship. Yeah. Or maybe there's a really cute girl. And you know she's watching you. And so you're going to be like, yeah, shine, Jesus, shine. I know we're not even singing that song. But I'm just looking so worshipful. Does she see me? Oh, she's not. Okay. Oh, yeah. Like, is that worship? No, that's looking at the crowd. Or like, I don't want to be embarrassing. This is Central Pennsylvania. You do know our roots here. We have some very traditional conservative roots. And there's nothing wrong with that. But if you're like fitting some sort of mold because that's what's expected and you're limiting your worship on to God, then you're not on fire for worship. You're on fire for people's opinions and what the people around you are thinking. Maybe a song is moving you to tears and you're like, I am a man. I do not cry. Maybe you need to. Maybe just let God see those tears, and who cares what people think? Because you're not worshiping for them, you're worshiping God. So do you worship unashamedly? The second question is, do I worship persistently? And notice this does not say consistently, because that's a given. We should be worshiping regularly. But persistently, meaning, as we've talked about already, even through the hard times, even through the ugly, even in the midst of the bad things that are happening around us. And you're like, yeah, well, you don't understand the way my week was, or you don't realize how hard this was, or they suffered for so long and I finally lost them. You don't get it. How do you expect me to worship? And I would say, yeah, I don't. But I know that we are called to worship God no matter our circumstances. And there's this guy named Job. And Job, his life was sailing. It was great. And then a whole bunch of bad stuff happened. And you know, you guys can look that up. You can read it more on your own. But he lost everything but his own health. And we did a whole series called Ruined about that. You can find that on our loop there. But this is what happened. Job lost everything. Everything. And again, read it on your own. We don't have time right now. But it says that after all this happened, the last messenger came in and said, by the way, all your kids are dead now too. And it says, Job stood up. Okay, that's it. I've had enough. And it says he tore his robe in grief. So now you're like, okay, he is about to mourn. He's about to let it all out and wail. And then he shaved his head, which was another symbol of mourning. And Job's about to let God have it. God, you suck! Why would you do this to me? I lost everything! But that's not what he did. It says he fell to the ground to worship. To worship. That was his response to a rough situation. And I don't know your situation, but I don't think it was worse than Job's. It could be, but it probably wasn't. He says, I came naked from my mother's womb, and I will be naked when I leave. The Lord gave me what I had, and the Lord has taken it away. Praise the name of the Lord. That is worship persistently. That is worship that says, you know what, it doesn't matter what my circumstances, it doesn't matter my feelings, it doesn't matter what my mood is, I can worship. And I would say one of the things, and I mentioned this a few weeks ago, one of the things I've seen and heard is people are like, oh, I really screwed up, or I'm in a bad place, or I'm not honoring God now, or I sinned in a big way. And they're like, so I'm not going to show up at church. I'm not going to gather to worship because God doesn't want me. And I'm like, that is just the opposite. That is why you should gather to worship. Say, God, I screwed up. God, I failed in a big way. And that's what Jesus did for me on the cross, to cover all that, to take that away. And so, yes, you screwed up. And that's all the more reason we should worship. To go, God, I messed up big time. And that's why Jesus died for me, and I worship you because of it. So do you worship persistently? The third question is, do I worship privately? Do I worship privately? And again, we said, like, if this is the only time you worship, then maybe you're missing something. Because if you can only worship when the band is singing or leading a good song, then you really don't understand what worship is. And we talked about this in our Building Blocks series, but worshiping only on Sunday mornings is sort of like, and this is what I taught that on that series years ago, is like eating breakfast one day on Sunday morning and then expecting that meal to sustain you for the entire week. And no one would do that. Frankly, we can even eat one meal and expect it to sustain us for an entire day. But that's what we end up doing. Like, oh, I'll just worship on Sunday. That's what I do. And there's nothing, again, this is a good thing, but it shouldn't stop there. And there's a couple passages I want to reflect on here. One is John 4. This is Jesus talking to a Samaritan woman at the well at Sychar outside of Samaria. And I don't have time to get into all of it. But the she's a Samaritan, and they worshipped in a different spot than the Jewish people worshipped. Jews worshipped in Jerusalem. The Samaritans didn't. And so she's talking to Jesus like, well, where is this worship? How does worship work? You know, Jews worship there. We worship here. What's going on? And Jesus says, believe me, dear woman, the time is coming when it will no longer matter whether you worship the Father on this mountain or in Jerusalem. He says, you know very little about the one you worship. We know a lot about him because salvation comes through Jews. He says, the time is coming, and indeed it's here now, when true worshipers will worship the Father, not in Jerusalem, not in the church building, but in spirit and in truth. The Father is looking for those who will worship him that way. For God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship in spirit and in truth. Jesus is saying, look, it's not about where you are. If you think you can only worship because you're in one spot, he probably would be able to say, hey, do you remember Psalm 42? When the psalm writer said, I'm not in Jerusalem, how can I still worship? That's the point, is that worship isn't just contained to here. We should be worshiping all the time, everywhere, on our own, not just because we're in a group. Over in Romans chapter 12, Paul says it this way, kind of talking about worship in the NLT. He says, so, dear brothers and sisters, I plead with you, give your bodies to God because of all he has done for you. Let them be a living and a holy sacrifice, the kind he will find acceptable. This is truly the way to worship him. It's through the week. It's through living. And if you're not sure what he meant by giving your bodies, I love how that message translates it, or paraphrases it, I should say. This is the message. It says, here's what I want you to do, God helping you. This is a paraphrase, the same verse, just a different way of reading it. It says, take your everyday, ordinary life, your sleeping, eating, going to work, and walking around life, and place it before God as an offering. See, if we are able to worship God, if we're only able to worship here, then we aren't really on fire for worship. Worship should be able to happen wherever we are. It shouldn't be bound to this building. It shouldn't even be bound to this style. We can worship different ways. And maybe that means you go home and you crank up Shine Jesus Shine. I don't know. Maybe you crank up the old rugged cross. Maybe you put on headphones and you turn it way down. because that's what you'd prefer. Maybe you have a flashlight shining in your eyes with both. Like, maybe you just close your eyes and worship in the dark. Maybe you crank up the music in your car and you worship and you sing and you sound horrible, but you are giving your all to God. Like, worship should not be confined to this space. Sing out, blast the music. And don't expect this group of sinful human beings up here to be the only way you can worship. Like, that's, first of all, a really huge burden to place on them, the band. And two, they're losers just like you. Like, they're never going to satisfy the way God can. So do you worship privately? And we'll talk more next week about growing on our own and what that looks like, because this idea of private worship, going beyond just privately. But what does it look like to grow on your own? Then the fourth question is, do I worship selflessly? Do I worship selflessly? Again, we talked about this in Churchianity 101. Why do we worship the way we do at MC3? Why do we do things the way we do here as a church body? And the question we have to ask is worship only on your terms? Can you only worship when it's the way you like it? And again, I've been beating this drum all morning. Can you only worship when it's the song you like? Can you only worship when the music's the way you want it? Can you worship? What if they forget the capo? Right? And suddenly you're like, oh, you're getting into it, and like, this is the wrong key. Sorry, we've got to stop. We got to restart that song. And if you're like, that's it, I'm done, one star, then again, your view on worship is so messed up. Now, to be clear, these guys practice every week as a whole group for a couple of hours. And that's expected, because we want the goal is so that there's not any distractions. But if it has to be built around the way you like it, then we've missed it. And this is what happened in Matthew chapter 15. And verse 7 starts out, and again, in your notes, it's jumped apart. It says, some Pharisees and teachers of religious law now arrive from Jerusalem to see Jesus. So Jesus is there. He's getting popular. And they came to Jesus, and they said, why do your disciples disobey? And look what they're disobeying. It's not, why do your disciples disobey the law of God? Why do you disobey the Bible? They say, why do you disobey our age-old tradition? Can one of you guys take this over there? Why do you disobey our age-old tradition? And it goes on, and Jesus answers them. He's like, it's not about the tradition. It's not about the stuff. He goes on and says, you hypocrites. He calls them hypocrites. He says, Isaiah was right when he prophesied about you. For he wrote, these people, look what he says, these people honor me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. These people honor me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. And what he's saying is that they go through the motions, they sing the songs, but they're not really worshiping. And the issue here is that these guys weren't worshiping. He says their worship is a farce. Like, those are some strong words. Your worship is fake. It's a bunch of crap. What are you doing? Why are you here? Why are you singing? If it's all about you, then it's not worship. He says, for they teach man-made ideas as commands from God. And so the question for us is that how you worship? Is it only with the songs that you like? Is it only when it's the style that you like? Is it with stage lighting? Or maybe it's without stage lighting? With the way it's supposed to be? That's not worship. Worship is about God. And so we should be worshiping selflessly. It's not about my opinion or my preferences. It's not about my situation. And as soon as we do that, you are worshiping yourself. Your worship is a bunch of crap. That's my paraphrase of your worship is a farce. It sounds like fart, so similar. Your worship is fake. He says, don't just honor God with your lips. Worship is about your heart. And your heart, if it's focused on you, isn't about God. So the point is that someone is on fire. They don't just sing songs. They pour. pour out their heart. And so the band is going to lead us, not worship for us, not worship for you, but they're going to lead us in a song of worship to God so that we can pour out our hearts. And maybe pouring out your heart for you in this moment is going to be on your knees, not even singing the words, because you need to talk to God. Maybe it needs to be for you for the first time ever. You're standing up with your hands to the ceiling, thanking God for who He is. Maybe you need to break down in tears. Maybe you just need to sit and soak in the words that you're actually singing from your mouth and reflect on what we're singing. But that's the opportunity for you right now, because if we're on fire, we're not just singing songs. We're pouring out our hearts. So would you please stand and pour out your heart with the band?